You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Tonight on the Cooligans, we are talking about the incredible and insane weekend in Major League Soccer and why Higuain was being roasted by the Philadelphia Union.
That's right. Plus, we talked to Kalen Carr. He's got a new podcast coming out called The Movement. Plus, he tells us some insane stories about Cuauhtémoc Blanco and his time in MLS. That and more today on the Cooligans!
What's up, guys? Landon Donovan here, and I got to kick it with the Cooligans today. Keep following, keep listening, keep watching. See you guys soon.
Yeah, baby!
Yes!
What happened to my voice?
We are in the building.
That's right. Well, our own buildings. Okay, we're still very remote.
Yeah. Our buildings are 6 feet apart, okay?
Yeah. We specifically requested that they be moved slightly.
Okay, yeah, we had to do a lot of, you know, rezoning and a lot of permits were required.
The paperwork alone was hell. But you know what? Nothing is too much for you guys.
Okay, yeah. We told FUBO we won't work under any other conditions.
Y'all got money. Spend it.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Cooligans. My name is Christian Polanco.
And I'm Alexis Guerreros.
All right. We are your favorite stand-up comedians that host the funniest soccer show that has ever existed on television, on radio, on
your
phone,
in the web, in the interwebs, all over. It also happens to be the gulliest of all those things as well.
Correct. And we have a great show today. We're going to be joined by Kalen Carr of MLS. Obviously, he's a former player and a host and presenter. He's a dear friend who we bump into on the subway.
And we heavily roast every time we're on any microphones near him. So
yeah, there's something about Kalen that it's just like you just want to roast him.
He's roast a bull, you know. Like, I'm not trying to say, like, your being, your vibe is causing me to have to say these things. I don't want to be this mean.
I feel like it's just nature. I don't know what to tell you.
We want to bully you, dude? I'm joking. He's a good friend. Look, I wore this for him, right? He's always talking about fashion and all that. Look at the drip, huh?
Okay, looking good. That's right.
Aberdeen kit. This Aberdeen might be from 2000, right?
All right. Just no doubt.
Right? Scottish football. I don't know if that accent is good or not.
I'm just going to assume it's bad. A lot to talk about today. Obviously, you know, like a couple weeks ago, we had Matt Doyle on the show, right, of MLSsoccer.com, and he was talking about how there's just so many games, there's just so many things to cover. There's just a lot going on right now in Major League Soccer.
Especially this weekend. There was like 45 games at the same time. I was like, this is great.
There was a lot. I'm like, even if you have like a multi-screen thing, you can't even watch every game. You know,
you need to be in one of those control rooms, like those you know what I mean, where there's it's just like a screen every five
MLS
inches.
I don't got enough bandwidth to watch all these games. I'm trying.
Yo, fam, how many gigabits do we need of internet?
There's a lot. But I want to focus on one in particular because the Philadelphia Union hosted Inter Miami in a very rainy, very wet Subaru Park. Okay. All right. It's the WAP is wet ass park. Okay.
Yeah, wet ass pitch. Also, I love that the rain did not stomp down any gulliness during this match whatsoever.
Not at all. And obviously the big news and the big focus was on Gonzalo Higuain, obviously moved over from Juve. You know, the lesser known Higuain brother when it comes to MLS.
I love that they're like, yo, Higuain, welcome to MLS. Here's Chester, Pennsylvania. And he's like, okay, all right, I see how it's going to be. This ain't going to be an easy introduction. Nah, fam.
Nah, dude. It was a rough game for him, right? He had a couple great chances. There was that, he almost had a bicycle kick that went off the post.
Yeah.
That was insane. But really, the main
all the news is the penalty.
The penalty. He gets there was a penalty. I believe there was a handball on Kasper Szczebielko and in the box. So
it's rather impressed with your ability to say Szczebielko.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. Bro, I feel
that. Because that's one of those you have to listen to how someone says, you can't read that. Because there's like a squiggly line in there.
There's a P. It starts with a P. It throws you off.
Already, you're like, what's going on? Am I supposed to? You know?
So handball on Shabilko. I this was already a bit of a shock to me that it was already Higuain's penalty. Like, it was already decided. Even though Pizarro's there, everybody, there's other players that I have
no conversation.
He was like, "Yo, I get off the plane,
right?
I'm walking to the penalty spot." Right. That's how it works.
Like, as soon as the whistle was blown, he looked at everyone's like, "Y'all know this Higuain time, right?
Okay,
y'all better not even touch that ball."
And yo, the Philadelphia Union were not having it, right? Nah. Because he obviously misses the penalty, skies it. So look, when it's typical Higuain, right? We know, right? We've seen him in Copa Americas, we've seen him in World Cups.
Making pancakes. The first one, right? That one's a throwaway. You're just trying to see what's up, right? Right? You're just trying to see how hot the pan is.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
The first one always gets thrown out. Yeah. You give it to the dog or something. And that's what he was doing, putting a little gift in the stands.
Correct.
For the stewards.
Look, how did it? I should have addressed it as the pancake rule. Everyone knows the pancake rule.
Right? No one here listening or watching had to think, what does he mean? You all know exactly what I meant.
We knew exactly. Yes. We know the system. What am I, an animal?
Okay. You think I don't watch the sport? I don't know about pancakes.
So, misses the penalty. But really what happened afterwards was what was so incredible, because everyone on the Philadelphia Union, even though they were up 2-0, were celebrating so hard that it was...
Lesnes basically sky fist pumped inches away from Higuain's face. But Higuain wasn't even mad at him. He was mad at somebody else.
Lesnes fist pumped so hard, I think he like gave Higuain like a fade. You know what I mean? Yeah, like, it was that close. Yeah, yeah. It was
head. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, man. Yo, I wanted just a number three. A bar. Damn, son.
Also, I think you got mosquitoes. Something just...
So, and then... but it looked like Higuain got really upset with Kai Wagner, right? He was directing his anger at him. And then Brujo Martinez gets in the way, tries to stop everything. But instead of trying to calm everybody down, mediate things, he did the... Wah, wah, wah. Yeah.
He's like, yo, don't fight, but also... Here comes a roast. You know what I mean? Like,
why are you crying?
I'm gonna stop doing. Don't you dare hit this little baby. You know, hit this little baby bitch ass. Yeah.
Like, why don't you cry? Why don't you cry on your $7 million a year? How about that?
Yeah, you know? Why don't you take your private jet to go get some Kleenex for that crying? It's
that was incredible. There was just so much going on.
But doesn't this seem like the perfect thing for a Jim Curtin team to do? We've had Jim Curtin on the show, friend of the show.
But it's so strange because Jim Curtin comes off as much more chill than that. But I imagine behind closed doors in the locker room, he must be like, yo, I need your roast pipita as soon as you get out there.
Well, as soon as he steps on a pitch, get in his ass.
I'm like, yo, Jim, I didn't know this was. I thought you were just a dude that like nice sneakers.
Brujo's like, him. Calmate.
No, incredible. We got all these great messages of people being like, yo, how gullies are the Philadelphia Union right now?
Wow, gully.
And we were talking about that in the Western Conference, the Sounders are dominating, but the Eastern Conference is looking like, you know, Philadelphia Union really got something to say. So it's quite impressive. Yeah. Kaylin Carr is on the show today, so stick around. Make sure you watch that. But I want to start this segment real quick with a little unboxing, a little reveal.
Hey, we got a little unboxing.
It's hard to see because of the reflection, but we got some stickers here from True North Elite and the shirt that I'm wearing, the True North Elite Black Lives Matter shirt. So shouts to True North Elite for all this awesome stuff. We appreciate it. This came from Chad Benti.
Which, if you don't know, is the largest cup you can order at Starbucks. Right?
That's great. Yeah, I'm sure he will love that. Chad is an awesome dude, a Gully Squad member. We met him when we went to Minnesota and we did the show with Miguel Ibarra.
With the hats, that was dope.
Show. It was great. And he sent a letter. He says, Dear the Cooligans, shouts to you, the Cooligans, from everyone.
Aww, shouts to us. He's right.
From everyone in True North Elite, we just want to say thank you for everything you have done and continue doing during the COVID lockdown and protest. You guys are killing it out there and out there in the soccer media world. Thank you for continuing on and giving us that great Cooligans content of D yelling at Alexis during a Twitch stream. And thank you for your great ADD filled quote unquote commentary on the watch alongs. Keep up the great work on bringing great guests every show. And thanks for asking my dumb questions that I ask sometimes. Thank you for the invite to your Zoom birthday parties. Can't wait to do it in person. Hopefully next time. You two are the best and keep up the good work. Love you guys. Also, shouts to the Gully Squad. You are all the best. Your friend Chad Benty, chomp chomp
chomp chomp. Let's go. Thank you so much, Chad. That was so dope.
Amazing. Yeah True North Elite, everybody, you know, for Dark Cloud, everyone in Minnesota has always been really kind and really supportive to us, so thank you. All right, so speaking of things going on in soccer, let's try to get to this a little bit. We don't have too much time, but given that I'm wearing a Black Lives Matter shirt, I want to just give a shout out to San Diego Loyal, because they did something really, really incredible. Obviously,
I've ever seen this before.
Yeah, it was a very unfortunate thing where a player from LA Galaxy 2 used the N-word on a San Diego Loyal player. It was everything was confirmed. We know who did it.
He admitted to it.
It was there were witnesses or whatever. The player has been released. But the interesting thing here is that the San Diego Loyal have forfeited the match and are not accepting the point.
They won a point. They won a point. There was a draw, but they said that they don't even want to be associated. They want to be on record as having any part to do with that game because of that incident, which is, I've never seen that before. Someone saying like, yo, take our name off the whole thing. We don't want to be a part of it. And yo, just shouts to San Diego Loyal for standing up for their player, which I wish we would see more in Europe. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Hopefully this really sets a standard and a precedent because this is a very bold statement and it's the right thing to do. So shout out to you, San Diego Loyal.
Absolutely. That's awesome.
For doing exactly that.
All right. Let's come back. Yeah, that's right, because we got Kalen Carr when we get back right after this. Hey, everybody. Thanks so much for listening to the podcast. We just want to break it with a word for one of our sponsors, us, and us, technically you.
The Cooligans have now gotten into the mask game. Okay,
right, everybody? We are big mask. That's the business we're in, baby.
Look, if you want to get, obviously, everybody, you need a mask. Wear a damn mask if you want to get over this dumb pandemic that is ruining all our lives. But we decided, you know what, let's make one, and I think it'll be kind of cool if it has the Cooligans logo on it. It also says stay safe and stay gully right on it. You'll be the freshest, gulliest mask wearer in the world.
Everybody at that Wegmans or wherever you go in, as they're dragging some maskless Karen out and you walk past them wearing this, will be like, whoa.
Yeah, you're just like, with your Cooligans mask, you're just gonna be like, couldn't be me.
Okay? Nah, fam, I'm staying gully and safe. And here's the best part. 100% of the proceeds is going to go to charity. We are, I guess, doing a collaboration with South Bronx United. They help the community in the South Bronx. They have a soccer academy. They do educational classes. They had a journalism class that Christian and I spoke at, and they were like, who are these two? They're not journalists. We know more than them. And I'm like, these kids say the darndest things. And also, they help out the community where they hand out masks. They do a lot of legal help for a community that could use all of those things. And we absolutely love all those things. We grew up in similar communities, so we wanted to give back. So 100% of the proceeds of this mask goes to that. And in fact, Upper 90, who is teamed up with us and is making the mask, actually gave us an even better deal so we could give even more to charity. So exactly. This would mean a lot to us if you would purchase this. Even if you didn't need an extra mask, it's worth having one, especially one that's as gully as this.
Exactly. So, you know, if you don't need one, give it to your child. Okay.
That's right.
They could use a nice gully mask while they're
put one on your
learning.
Puppy.
Okay. So pick one up. You can get them at soccercooligans.com. They are from Upper 90. They're a high quality mask. You can wear them for a long time. They're really comfortable. Highly recommend it. Even if you don't need one, all the proceeds do go to charity. So you'll be supporting a very good cause in South Bronx United. You can see the description. The link will be in the description of this podcast episode. Or you can just go right to soccercooligans.com and the link will be there as well. So pick up a mask today.
All right, baby. We're back on the Cooligans Living Room FC. And our guest is finally here. Christian.
Yeah, the it's long overdue, the highly esteemed.
Yes. We have been begging this man. I can think back to about 4.5 years ago when I saw this dude just hanging out on the train, and I got real close to him. And I was like, yo, you on MLS? I'm a comedian. I got a podcast. Be on it. And he was like, and I think he was searching for Mace at the moment.
Well, that's usually how we book our guests. We have Alexis.
It's very really aggressive.
A real close talker, you know? Yep. That's how we got Landon Donovan, you know? Kind of muscled him onto the show.
He was like, this is my floor in this elevator. And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about because you got to get around me, my G. Okay. I'm not going to be leaving easy Algeria's defenders.
You know what you ain't I mean? Leaving until I get this agreement that you will appear on our program.
The producers have co-signed it. Fubo loves our booking style. But this dude, you know him. One, I mean, he wore a helmet while he played, right?
Yes.
Houston Dynamo, Chicago Fire. And you're like, the helmet, it probably was more function than fashion. And then we got to meet him after the game, and we're like, that was 100% fashion. All right? Because this dude likes to stay on the cusp. In fact, so much so that we're about to talk about a podcast that he's got coming out that was just profiled on Hypebeast. And could you find a more perfect publication for this man? Ladies and gentlemen, unless you're driving, MLS's own hour. Good friend, based on that subway altercation. Ladies and gentlemen, the one and only Kalen Carr, everybody.
Kalen, what is good? Yes, honored to have you on this show. It's been too long. You know, people have the streets have demanded it for a long time, and it's finally happening.
I forgot about that subway interaction, actually, until now. I remember it vividly now, though. I was on the F train.
Yeah,
I was going across town to I was playing a men's league game, I think, and I was like, I had my boots and everything like that, and this might surprise you, I don't get recognized much in the world. You got to go deep, so yeah. It felt kind of good. It felt nice, but anyways, thanks for having me on, guys. I'm really happy to be here.
You're like, it felt good, and then I talked. You're like, ah.
Yeah, it's like being recognized, but for the wrong reasons by the wrong person.
I thought it was maybe for my men's league exploits. So I was in my prime in men's league at those days.
Imagine I was like, why didn't you ever play in MLS? I know that round. You were so good.
Kalen, dude, like we said, we're huge fans of you. I mean, we obviously have been watching. We saw you play. We watched your work on MLS soccer.com on MLS's broadcast. You right now are obviously the Movement, which is a video series that you've been doing for a long time. Has spanned the globe. You've done so many awesome things.
Like 34 episodes, right?
That's right.
Wow.
And being getting like coverage of just different things related to soccer, but right now, and I want to spend as much time as possible talking about this because I listened to the first episode of the Movement podcast, which really focused on the Black Players for Change organization and the movement and everything that's been going on this summer, which has just been obviously either with tragic and then these positive things that have come from it. The podcast is incredible. Everybody watching and listening, make sure you check it out. But what was this experience like for you? What triggered the idea to do this? And then who are you now after? Because listening to it, I can imagine that the conversations were difficult, painful. And so, you know, how is everything now? How are you right now?
Well, I would say I'm good. I'm here with you guys. And I think it's been cool to see how this summer, a lot of conversations that, frankly, I was having with players, former teammates or friends, maybe behind closed doors or in kind of quiet corners of locker rooms or just kind of casually, are now coming to light. And more people are talking about it in media and in soccer media specifically, which is a really positive thing. Terrible circumstances that have brought this on, but also not new circumstances, not circumstances that are the long predate this podcast and will sadly continue beyond it. And it was one of these things where we've traveled around and talked to a lot of these players around, whether it was we just did a piece in the video series on the El Paso shooting and Alejandro Bedoya when he grabbed the microphone and said, hey, Congress, stop gun violence, do something now. Or even when you go further back and we look at some of the issues We did one in Pulse, nightclub shooting in Orlando. Mm-hmm. So we've done multiple episodes around this. We've looked at different cultures and communities that maybe haven't always had the voice or the opportunity to, I don't know, have their perspectives heard, or that, and now we've seen that sort of across sports media and the sporting landscape, where people are speaking out, and that has a long legacy, but also a pretty long one as well as soccer. And we've seen really the women's side pushing that conversation forward through Megan Rapinoe and the NWSL, and even on the basketball side with the with the WNBA and the NBA players speaking out. But now it feels like there's this new wave of players within MLS that are really, over the last, I would say, 4 years especially, pushing that conversation forward. And it's been little by little, and I think people are just starting to listen more and more. But as the conversation happened, kind of like everybody, I was sitting and watching what was happening with George Floyd, first that murder happening. Breonna Taylor was before that, but then that kind of sparked the energy to for people to start speaking about her case. Then I was in Atlanta for the quarantine where my girlfriend's family lives, and that's where Ahmaud Arbery was killed in Georgia, and then Rayshard Brooks as well. And so I started going to protests, and I was seeing people from Atlanta United supporters who were seeing me. I was posting about it just on social media. And some of the fans were like, hey, like, let's link up. We're out here in the streets too. Can we get together? We're organizing. They were kind of using some of the sort of essence of a supporters group or the structural organization to make signs that I actually just sort of walked by and saw one for George Floyd. And I took a photo of it, and they were like, hey, this is Guerrilla Company. That's our supporters group. We make that sign. We put it in a visible area for people to see. So I started seeing the soccer community really stepping up and being a part of this. And right around the same time was when Ray Gattis hit me up. Ray's a guy that I've gotten to know for a while now from either playing against each other and then through Warren Craval, who's a really close friend of mine. And we were just at his wedding in Houston last December, which was like my last social experience. I mean, we went pretty hard. It was really fun. And tons of MLS players, CJ Sabong, Ashton Morgan, a bunch of people were there. But we probably would have had even more fun if we would have known the world was about to shut down.
Exactly.
But Ray hit me up and was like, I'm back in Indianapolis and I'm going to protests in my hometown. And he's like, how can we get this story out there? And I was in Atlanta, and I was like, looked it up, and I was like, it's a maybe 6-7-8 hour drive. I don't have a car. I don't know how to get there. I don't have a camera crew. I don't have any of the things that we normally would have for the movement show. And I was like, maybe we could just do an audio interview and capture that. And then from there, it began to grow where I was like, I've always wanted to talk to Jeremy Abobase about this. Like, how's he doing right now? And then I was like, right where George Floyd was murdered, Ike Opara lives a mile away from there, and I talked to Ike on a movement episode a year before about police brutality and what it's like for him as a black man in Minneapolis when he leaves the stadium and the threat that he feels at times. And so it was it kind of began to go, and then the BPC formed. We saw what happened in Orlando on that opening night, then with the Philadelphia Union changing their names. So I just kept calling people up again and following up on the story. And sadly, it wouldn't end. I mean, we thought we had finished the episode a couple of times, and then there was another murder after the next where I interviewed people in Atlanta about Ahmaud Arbery, and then it was Rayshard Brooks. And I was like, oh, well, we have to go back and talk to people again. And then it was MLS returns to their markets, and then it was Reggie Cannon getting booed in Dallas, and then it was everything that happened with Doyle Hansen in Salt Lake. So it was just this story that continues and will continue to go, sadly, but also in a really, I was really moved and inspired by these players being willing to talk to me about it, share their experiences, and the way that they have organized collectively to push for social change.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to cap that point, it's just like how awesome it is to hear the players and the work that they're doing, and it really comes off. It doesn't sound like you're talking to athletes, right? It sounds like you're talking to purely seasoned, passionate activists that are trying to change the world. So we were discussing the Movement podcast, and especially that first episode. But the interesting thing is with the last couple months, there have been. you know, it has been pretty incredible that Major League Soccer has taken has really listened to its players and listened to the BPC organization to kind of help make change and not be, you know, like the NFL was very adversarial with Colin Kaepernick, and you're starting to see that the culture is changing so much where that would be ridiculous, right? But there's still some, like, you know, not everyone is going to get it right the first time immediately and or in every single instance. And one of them, you mentioned the Del Loy Hansen kind of, you know, things coming to light. And some people are critical of MLS, especially like sort of the response. And there's almost like this, like, you know, pussyfooting around like what the exact problem is and still being kind and being patient with people that, you know, kind of either say awful things or do awful things. What is the being, you know, working for MLS and trying to deliver this message? Do you feel a sense of, I don't know, either responsibility or duty to like kind of get everyone on board or kind of share the message that you're trying to, you know, deliver, even with your own like coworkers?
Yeah, well, I think everybody right now has been tasked with having to look at their own community and look at their own immediate, whether it's your family, your friends, people you interact with on a daily basis, your coworkers, whatever, or yourself. And I think that's something that I've tried to take on. And I just think, especially at a time like this, it's very easy to point out the window and say, that's wrong, right? You watch the video of these murders and you're like, yeah, that's wrong. There, we can all agree it's horrific to see it. And that's, sadly, it's taken, in a lot of these cases, the video to actually prove to people that this has been something that's been going on for a long time. And but it's a little harder to sort of look out the window at some of the injustice you're seeing and realize that in some ways that's a mirror for your own community or for your own self or your own life or your own, you know, place that you are in. And I think that's what we've all been tasked to do and what I'm trying to take on to do alongside people. And yeah, racism doesn't just exist in the streets, right? It exists in football, it exists in soccer, it exists in our sport. And I think it's been easier to some ways look abroad and say, oh, you see what's happened to Raheem Sterling, or you've seen what's happened to Mario Balotelli, or you've seen it happen in these other places in Syria, and that's their problem, right? That's not our problem. That's not something we have to deal with. And then you start to look a little bit deeper and you say, well, racism doesn't just exist in the ways that are so obvious where you just can't ignore it, right? Where it's the way somebody would, you know, do a monkey chant or in the sort of conceptions of racism that we all accept are wrong. But it exists in these sort of small, minute ways, whether it's in the media and the way we talk about players, or whether it exists in how we select players for our team, or whether it exists in our structures, right? Like the structures of organizations or ownership, that's not immune to the structures that exist in our society at large. No. And so I think what's happening right now in MLS is people are beginning to examine some of that and being in some, people are holding up the mirror, and by people I mean the BPC and I think communities around them and people who support them, to say that, you know, this really isn't right. And what can we do to make it better? And in some cases, that's been painful to watch. And my thing is, like, we can't only respond, I'll speak, as a league or as a soccer community in moments of crisis, right? Like, we can't just respond when something is wrong, or you got somebody tweeting at you, or you have somebody who says something terrible in the media. Like, those are the easy and obvious times, I think, to, all right, wow, what do we do? But it's a lot longer journey and a harder road to, not in moments of crisis, but in normal times, to have this just become a normal part of your life, to say, okay, we're not just not racist, we're anti-racist, or whatever it is. Like, we're working to create access or opportunity and to make sure that we understand that soccer isn't just this little bubble, right? It's not this safe bubble that exists. That's just this beautiful little thing that is just naturally good. That's the point I was trying to make at the end of the podcast. It's like, not to give it away, but just to say that, like, we are not just in this little snow globe of perfect harmony. Like, there's a lot of things where the forces outside really do affect us, and the structures within it need to be changed as well.
I only sing Kumbaya in the supporter section. I don't know what you're talking about.
You know, the part about this disease, about COVID-19, that scares me is that we can't all hold hands for 90 minutes with the opposite supporters, which we all do.
Per usual.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Every day. I mean, when you look at your podcast, was it a conscious decision after you got all these interviews to say, like, I think we can convert the video series, which is probably very difficult to do right now, to this audio thing? And do you think it'll have the same translation? Do you think it'll be different? Are you looking for maybe an evolution of the idea? Where's your head at as you see it sort of going into our realm? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I've got to be careful with that. During the commercial break, you're like, hey, you're talking too much.
I never said that.
I don't know, actually. It's a really good question. I really don't know. I think my sort of hope is that we do both, and you just kind of let the stories decide which one fits best. Right now, it's just this was the best way to tell this story at the moment in a safe way. But it's something I've been wanting to do for a long time, is to do an audio version of the stories as well. And the cool thing about it was, if you go to like Portland, and I only hang out with Jeremy Abobasi, it's just a Portland story, and whatever I get in those 4 or 5 days there, you get on the plane back to New York, it's over. That's the end of the piece, right?
Yeah.
And there's something really nice about that. And because from a work standpoint, but also from like, you're capturing this sort of capsule. But this one kind of opened things up in a way where I could talk to players from so many different cities, and you could still capture some of that same feeling of like, you're riding along with me to Atlanta and like going out to a protest, or you're going to feel what it feels like for Ike in Minneapolis, or Ray in Indianapolis, Minneapolis and Indianapolis. So I think in some ways that was kind of a cool surprise for me to realize, like, oh, I could talk to people multiple times. Like, you just got to get on a Zoom room. And I think for when we look at soccer media overall, like the way you guys have adapted, I don't have to come into the studio necessarily or be in New York to be on your show. Whereas that might open up some possibilities to get more perspectives or people involved that otherwise it would be a little bit harder.
But, you know, now I can't see them on the subway now.
You know? I do miss the subway in a strange, weird, twisted way.
I'll be honest. Look, the movement, you know, audio podcast about Hawaii is not really the same as actually going
that
there.
That needs to be a video episode. Yes.
Yeah. Without a doubt.
We also can't see you walking 120 frames per second on the audio podcast. Yeah. So no, is it
I'm
even
still
really
not
the
sure
movement?
How I got away with that one.
He's
gonna teach me how to surf. It's gonna be good. Let's do this.
I think that was one of the first times we hung out, was in the All-Star game in Chicago, and Alexis was doing the impression of you doing this one foot in front of the other at the what is it?
Typically on train tracks, graffiti in the background, soft music playing. It's
if you can find a way to do that on a podcast, I would really. I've been trying to figure this one out for a while. It's hard.
We got all more. Right. We got more.
Alexis is that was a good impression, I will say. Like he like I don't know if he'd been practicing in the mirror, but I feel like he was definitely had the slow motion, the whole vibe.
Oh yeah. He was waiting on that one. He was when I meet Kalen,
I was showing my move, man. Yeah. Let's look back at your career a little bit, because we were in Chicago for MLS All-Star, and you know, we kind of messed with you a little bit. We were roasting as you were trying to film stuff, you know, just ruining your budget. And the one thing I noticed is that you are beloved in Chicago. You're not just liked. Like, you, when you walk by, everyone's like, oh, that's Kalen Carr. Kalen Carr is here. Why do you think that that city connected with you so strongly?
I don't know. I mean, I remember when I first showed up to the club. I mean, the first meet and greet you do, like, all of Section 8 already knew everything about me. Like, I pulled up and they were like, hey, you went to Berkeley, your mom's a professor, like, you went to Brazil when you were 16 to train. And I was like, you know, you're going from being like a college kid eating burritos in Berkeley to being like, oh, I'm a professional athlete now, I don't know if anybody's gonna know me. And then everybody immediately was like, had done all this kind of research on me, and just really eager to get to know me.
Dumped a stack of paperwork. Like, yeah. This is all Caitlin Carr. We know.
Dude, you cheated on this test in high school. They have it. You're like, why is that?
That
is
like, that's the kind of player we need here.
Yeah. Wow.
No, but it was awesome. And then, like, I don't know. I think MLS players in general are, you see it even when I look at guys now, and you go around the league and you look at, like, Zarek Valentin is a guy that I think of a lot that pops to mind as somebody who's just like really gone out of his way to just be a normal dude and is a normal guy and is just meeting people. And you go around to like almost every club you see this. I remember Roger Levesque in Seattle, and like, I don't know if I ever ascended to those ranks, but I just think MLS players are unique in a way where you're not making, well, some dudes now are making millions of dollars, yeah. But mm-hmm. I sure wasn't, and you just kind of get a chance to connect with people. There's less barriers to entry to get to know fans, and that was always something that I kind of enjoyed about it. Like, I mean, you could see it in the work I do now. I enjoy, like you guys do, like linking up with people and meeting through playing sport, and so I never looked at it as that much different than just like than that and meeting people. Yeah. So. And then my mom would come visit Chicago, and she had lived there and gone to University of Chicago. So, like, she knew everybody from the ushers to the fans to everybody around the club. So the club was in a really cool place when I arrived. There was, like, C.J. Brown and Jim Curtin and Chris Armas and, like, all these really legendary players that were able to kind of, like, usher me along and show me the ropes of how to be a professional and, like, what it means to play for a club like that. And so it was a really easy place to land, especially when you look at, like, Chicago's just a great sports town. Yeah. We opened a brand new stadium. Now they're going back to Soldier. But it was just a really fun time. And I lived with, like, two dudes that I grew up with in the Bay Area who were just, like, you know, working normal jobs. But we lived in, like, a three-bedroom spot over in, like, you know, I think we were in South Loop. We moved around because, you know, young guys. But it was a really fun time in my life. And
you kept trash in every apartment you lived in. I get it.
Kicked out. What's this chain on our door?
Oh, they would go party on Friday nights, and I'd be like, "Oh man, I got a game tomorrow." But
right.
If you guys want some tickets,
we'll believe that.
What about you were there while Cuauhtemoc Blanco was there? That must have been absolutely insane. I mean, connection with the Mexican community in Chicago, which is awesome. Like, we've hung out a lot in Pilsen, in that area. It's just incredible.
Legend as well.
Yeah, the governor Blanco, yeah. Of course. Uh-huh. What was it like playing with him, and then that connection to the fan base when he arrived?
And did he ever make you pay for a meal?
No, he was good about that. He was really good about that. I mean, I think guys were actually nervous before he came because you had heard about Cuauhtemoc and just like he's just a crazy personality, a massive personality, a massive star. And so you're like, we had a pretty good locker room and we were like, well, is this going to like, this could go really bad. Like, this could be crazy. I don't know what this is going to be like. And it was crazy for sure. It was nuts. But in a really good way, in a really fun way. Like, he would take, I mean, him and I actually became, I would say, pretty close friends in the time that we played together and just really kind of got along. He called me Spaghetti because of my hair. I had, like, the curly hair, and he would like...
so you've been getting roasted your entire life, kid.
It's not us. It's not just us.
It prepared me for this podcast, yeah. I think he called me Cuerpo Chihuahueño, which was like...
like a chihuahua? What
like
is that?
Like little dog body. I remember
that's a classic big dude roast of a guy. I would call Christian bird chest when this podcast started, which is like, bro, that gets it off me being too big. It's your fault for being too thin.
Yeah, we need to. This is how we need to bond and connect. Us thin, frail folks. These big dudes been attacking us for too long.
No, we got to stick together, man. I wish I had you in the locker room back then, because he tied me to a rolling chair and pushed me out into the Toyota Park Bridgeview parking lot with the whole front office is like upstairs looking at me, and I'm just like sitting there in my training gear.
Cuauhtemoc Blanco is an '80s bully from a movie.
No, but
he is a frat hazer is what he is.
but it was all love. Like, it was, yeah. I don't know. I kind of loved it all, too. It was really fun. And, like, he gave me a lot of belief on the pitch as well, too. And we kind of had a, like, we had Juan Carlos Osorio, who was, came in as the head coach around the same time. And we went on this incredible run and got into the playoffs. I was starting playoff games. Like, it was really, really fun. And, yeah, we went to Mexico with him, which was insane. I remember there was one time where this guy came to watch us train. I think we were in Aguascalientes. And this guy shows up in a, like, a Volkswagen Bug. And it was all America, painted all America. And he takes off his shirt, and he's got a tattoo of Cuauhtémoc's face right on his shoulder. And then another one of him doing the, like, Aguila celebration.
Ooh. Yeah, right here.
There it is, yeah, on his back. And I see him sign his forearm with a Sharpie, and he's got this elaborate signature. It's massive. It's like, you know, it's a long name. And he just goes, he goes all in because he wasn't shy. And the next day, the guy comes back, and it's tattooed over the over the Sharpie. And I was like, oh, man. I know this was around the time of Beckham, and I was like, Beckham is crazy, and that's amazing, but I don't know if people are doing this, like dedicating their whole body to someone like that. And just to go to Mexico and see, not even Mexico, I mean, we went to Salt Lake, we'd go to LAX, we'd go, people would leave their shift at the airport to just, I don't know if they quit their jobs, just be like, I don't care, I'm going to get this autograph.
Get on whatever seat you want, I gotta go see
It was like, it was like traveling with a rock star. It was like the affection that they had for him and like what he meant, I think, coming from where he came from, I think in Pepito, which is like a really rough area. He told me it's where you go if you lost your, if you got your like car stolen or your radio stolen, that's where you got to go to buy it back. So just like a guy that had was blue collar, represented like the culture and went and did it at the, you know, highest level for his country. But he brought it every day in MLS and every training. He used to get kicked like crazy and played through it all. And just an, one of the best teammates I've ever played with and just funnest characters ever to be around.
Yeah. So, yeah. Incredible. Kaylin's just like, a comedian recognized me on the subway, you know?
So similar to your tattoo story. Yep.
That was big. That was big for me. Don't undervalue that. That was big.
We're here with Kaylin Carr of Major League Soccer and obviously the Movement Podcast. Go check it out wherever you get your podcasts. Right after you download, subscribe, and leave 5 stars for the Cooligans. Right after that.
It won't play unless you do all those things first.
Which I think is really cool of you guys to put that on there. When we look at your career, you know, to go from playing in the era you did, which is just past sort of where teams are getting contracted. And it seems like your career was at the beginning of the change for MLS to sort of be the league that it is today. Looking down at the league that you're, you know, now working for and seeing all the changes from this perspective that you now have, obviously it's got to be exciting. What do you think could possibly be next? Like, everyone is always asking, like, what's going to happen by the time we get to the next World Cup, or possibly by 2026 when the World Cup comes here? Players are getting sold to big European teams. We're developing players at a faster rate and at a better rate than we ever have before. No disrespect to you, obviously. Like, what do you think is going to happen? What do you see for the next few years for MLS?
It's exciting. I mean, I do think about myself and how I would fit in into this new MLS. I wish I played in this version. I think everybody probably who played in the earlier versions would say that, where it's like the facilities, the infrastructure. I mean, I was just kind of at the dawn of some of these soccer-specific stadiums that were exciting. I got to open up one in Chicago and then one in Houston. But like, we didn't have really academies. And right when we started the academies, the kids that came in, it was like, ton of talent, but what's really the plan for them at times? And then now you see it's, I mean, you go through and talk to some of these coaches in their office, it's like 2, 3, 4 depth charts into the academy. When will he project at, he's 15, at 18, we think he's got a chance, at 8, then we move him on to Europe. Like, what I'm seeing now is just totally almost unrecognizable. And that's just from the, like, playing structural side. Then you go to, you know, being in Atlanta in front of 70,000 at MLS Cup. Hope we get back to a safe place to do that type of situation again.
Yeah.
And the way that the league is expanding so fast that I almost sometimes don't even know, like, what year is Charlotte or Austin? I mean, and it switched. Yeah. It's just almost hard to keep track how fast it's growing. And for me, I look towards, like, 2026. And I think that's what we all are kind of keeping an eye on. And just really, if you just look at Canada and how much that program has changed from the club level, and then also now with the, not just MLS, but the other leagues, and then the national team, and the fact that, like, Canada's going to host a World Cup. And I just remember when I was, 12 years old, the World Cup 94 was in the U.S., and I went to watch Brazil play USA play at Stamford Stadium with my mom, and I just remember seeing those, like, canary yellow jerseys, and I didn't really know what else was going on, but I just, like, I wanted in on that. And how that changed my entire life. Like, I'm literally have devoted my whole life to this sport, and from a professional standpoint, personal standpoint, all the friends, like, people that I interact with. And so I just think about what that could mean for kids in Toronto or Brampton or Edmonton or Vancouver, like wherever it might be. And then even in the U.S. as well. So, and Mexico's already got it. Like, they don't need that cultural part.
So, like, oh, this old thing again?
Here we go.
It'll end up, we'll end up having like a Canadian Premier League team win the CONCACAF Champions League,
Forge Hamilton is going to
Hey, you made a team in Brampton. We did an episode there, and Ayo Akinola's from there, too. Every time I see a kid come through and be like, oh, he scored a hat-trick, and I'm like, where are they from? Oh, yeah.
I don't know what you're talking about. Ayo Akinola is American. Come to the Mets National team. We should talk about Brampton.
No, he's never even heard of that place.
Never heard of it.
Keep working it. Yeah, there's a lot to be excited for. I mean, this year has been hard on everybody, and I don't think you can underestimate, like, understate what has happened. But I still look ahead, and with some work, I think there's still a lot to be to look ahead for.
Hell yeah.
I mean, and we're going to look to you to be on the forefront of getting that message out there of not only MLS, but just to get these players to be more, they'll be superstars by the time the World Cup comes around. And it'll be because, they appeared on the movement or so on and so forth.
Look at this show. Like, this show didn't exist long ago, right? Now you started out the podcast. Now you have a TV show, and, like, just the perspective that you guys are talking about is something that really hasn't been covered in the past. So I think just as you look at all of these little things compound to create something much bigger. And so, I commend you guys for, I feel like you guys have that kind of, like, hustler spirit and drive to make it happen. And that's really important. We need that.
Thank you. Right. No, you're right. We mad important.
hopefully we make it to the 2026 World Cup. We'll see.
You're not just important because I ask you for, like, Fubo TV discounts.
Well, we send it to you every week.
Thank you again for checking out another episode of The Cooligans. We appreciate Kaylin Carr absolutely crushing it on the show. So, Kaylin, before we sign off, is there anything you want to let people know about, anything you want to plug?
I just want to say thank you to all the people that participated in the podcast, all the players from the BPC, the supporters in Atlanta and across the U.S. I probably should plug my social handles, CA2 on Instagram, or CA2 on Instagram, and then at Kaylin Carr on Twitter. But I want to give a special shout out to Warren Craval. He designed the podcast art for the episode alongside photography by Ethan White. Check out Warren's brand, Craval. It's craval.co. And then please check out the podcast. Give it a listen. I think it's an important perspective at this time, especially. And you can find that anywhere you find your podcast. It's called The Movement, like the video series, which is on YouTube, 4 seasons of that. And thank you guys so much for having me on the show.
Absolutely. And anytime, brother. Yeah, and I, again, highly recommend checking out the podcast. It's really, really good, and it is very, like, I honestly got emotional listening to it. It's very, very powerful stuff. So it was a great introductory episode to the podcast, which is already a great video series. So, all right. So everybody, make sure you follow as well at Soccer Cooligans on all social media platforms. Follow at Fubo Sports, and make sure to subscribe to the Fubo Sports YouTube channel for full episodes of the show. So let us end the show the way we normally do. So for Kaylin Carr, my name is Christian Polanco.
I'm Alexis Guerreros.
And together, what are we?
The Cooligans!